It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to staying healthy while traveling and tips from a family medicine physician. You might be packing your bags as we speak, and whether you're going by car or plane, we get advice on how to stay healthy while on the go and gathering with other groups. Join in with questions for the doctor, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Danielle Mitchell is SSM Health's Regional Medical Director for Primary Care for Southern Wisconsin. Dr. Mitchell, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're hearing reports from hospitals about higher caseloads of RSV, respiratory syncytial virus. Are more patients coming into your clinics with RSV or other respiratory problems?
Yeah, so we are actually seeing an uptick in cases with RSV, and it's not just here, of course, in Wisconsin, but nationally as well. And for those that are not familiar with RSV, it is a viral infection. It can infect anywhere from, you know, kiddos all the way up into adults. Typically, in most cases, the presentation is with mild upper respiratory symptoms, so that might include fever, cough, people feeling generally fatigued and malaise, but we are really careful because in kiddos, particularly 2 years of age and less, we can see a more severe presentation that can progress into a lower respiratory infection and pneumonia.
If we're traveling to another part of the country, should we be more concerned about RSV versus, you know, here in the Midwest?
You know, with regards to just overall precautions, I think, you know, we live, I feel like, in a different time period where we're definitely more aware, I think, of, you know, since COVID has occurred, the precautions that we can take. And they're easy precautions, I think, for people to be able to do. The good old tried and true in case of washing hands, not touching face. The reason behind, of course, not touching face is because our face houses most of the mucous membranes where a lot of viral and bacterial transmission will occur. So keeping fingers out of eyes, nose, and mouth is always an excellent idea for multiple reasons. Of course, washing hands in the first place just to keep those pathogens and those viruses and bacteria off of our hands. But also being able to be mindfully aware that if somebody is actively coughing, that's probably somebody that you don't want to be in close proximity to. So that's where, you know, during COVID, of course, the 6 feet of social distancing really kind of was reemphasized. That's always been there with regards to, you know, not trying to catch something from somebody that has an airborne illness. And of course, the other things that we can do as well is wearing masks. You know, masks are so much about protecting the person next to you. N95s that have a higher filtration capability do also protect others, not only around you, but also yourself as well.
In terms of wearing masks, what are your suggestions for air travel? Would you say wear those masks on the plane?
I would. You know, there's a lot of debate back and forth about, you know, when people are on a plane, you know, what the air quality on the plane is. We do know that those are, the air is to a certain extent recycled and filtered. But we also know, too, that you're sitting in close proximity, probably closer than what you might normally sit next to somebody just in a regular public setting. And so wearing a mask, I think, is always a good idea on a plane, just to protect not only your neighbors, but if you can wear an N95, then that would offer some protection for yourself.
The Food and Drug Administration added amoxicillin last month to its list of nationwide drug shortages. Do you have enough meds on hand to treat, you know, these common childhood illnesses like flu and ear infections and strep throats?
Yeah, so right now we are under a shortage with some of the liquid amoxicillins, and that usually comes up as an issue when we have kiddos that can't either swallow pills or chew pills. And just to remind everybody, you know, antibiotics like amoxicillin are used to treat bacterial infections. A lot of times when we see things like ear infections in kiddos, it starts out as viral. It can go on to a bacterial infection. Right now, we do have adequate supplies to be able to treat people, but we are asking people to be mindful. Antibiotic stewardship and those decisions made behind whether a patient should take antibiotics or not, it's really kind of coming front and center again, not only with shortages pushing this, but just resistance patterns as well that we deal with overall. So, you know, just the idea that not every cough and cold needs an antibiotic, not every ear infection needs an antibiotic, that really is kind of the forefront of messaging when we're talking with patients. And so being mindful, you know, as we're trying to give conservative measures, we definitely want to help people feel better. We have adequate supplies to treat people right now, but we need to be mindful that our supplies are sometimes tenuous, particularly as we live in this endemic phase of COVID and all of the supply chain shortages we're facing.
Are there rapid tests to help determine whether your symptoms are coming from, you know, a viral infection versus a bacterial one?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I trained in the era, and I think that a lot of providers will agree with this, that a lot of the diagnostic accuracy of figuring out what your patient actually has comes from soliciting a great history from them. And so that's why we really kind of discourage when people want to call in, I've got a sore throat, this has always been strep every year, can you just send me my antibiotic? That really then, if that happens, that whole process gets bypassed in terms of soliciting that good history from people, because that's really kind of the first step, right? Mm. So we encourage patients, and we're very good about saying, you know, we need to make sure that we get the appropriate history from you, because it's the first step in diagnosing somebody and probably one of the most important. If somebody's presenting with a constellation of symptoms, let's say high fever, extreme fatigue, muscle aches, back aches, sore muscles, things like that, that might lead the provider to think, oh, this is probably a viral infection and this might actually be flu. So we do have rapid tests to be able to diagnose flu. We also have, you know, the ability to test for strep throat, which is a bacterial infection. Again, the history there is really important. And a lot of times you can actually pinpoint the diagnosis without even doing the tests up front. The same thing, of course, for COVID. We have rapid tests that are available, widely available to the public for free in most cases, to be able to test at home for COVID, which is another great point to make about travel, that if you're going somewhere, you know, you definitely want to be mindful that if you are having any symptoms whatsoever, and especially if you're getting into a car or a plane where other people are going to be in close proximity to you, having that home test available to you can really make the difference between somebody else getting very, very sick versus not.
Dr. Danielle Mitchell with us, SSM Health's Regional Medical Director for Primary Care in Southern Wisconsin, helping us to limit exposure, ease the travel process, tips on how to stay healthy. Join in with your questions about masking, about COVID, about immunizations, and more. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the holiday season that brings people together and how to limit health risks in this busy travel time. AAA predicts roughly 55 million Americans are expected to travel 50 miles or more this Thanksgiving weekend. Join in with questions for the doctor, 800-642-1234. We have Dr. Danielle Mitchell, SSM Health's Regional Medical Director for Primary Care in Southern Wisconsin, stays with us. Dr. Mitchell, when we're going on the road, what medical information and what supplies should people carry while traveling?
Oh, that's a good question. So, you know, of course, as we just talked about previously, making sure that, you know, people, if you're in close proximity to others that you might think are sick, first of all, making the decision to not go would always be something that we would think about, just to not get others sick. Holiday times are times when we see an increased rise, usually in respiratory-borne pathogens as they're passed back and forth at holiday gatherings. Some of those supplies, you know, might include like masks as you're going over to other people's homes. Certainly hand sanitizer, if you have that available, washing hands actively, of course, while you're at your guest's home. Making sure too that you have, you know, if you are traveling overnight, that you have things like Tylenol, children's Tylenol, ibuprofen, all of those things to help people feel more comfortable, I think are great additions to any overnight bag when you're traveling. And of course, just making sure too that you have all of your regular medicines, particularly this time of year with allergies and asthma. The colder, dry weather sets in, and so people who have other illness states like asthma are unfortunately more predisposed to having more severe outcomes than others might have with COVID or flu or RSV. So you're making sure that those medicines, of course, are available and with them in their overnight bag.
In the carry-on, for sure. Also, you know, I would imagine your medical card or any medical history that you might need if you do have to go outside a network for care.
Yeah, absolutely. So in particular, you know, just in terms of emergency preparedness, when it comes to health, it's always a nice idea to have, if you have a significant medical history, and significant medical history can be anything from an allergy to a medicine to, you know, prescription medicines that you might be on, having some type of medication list in your wallet or your purse is always a good idea. If you have life-threatening allergies, of course, you know, if people have to carry EpiPens, always making sure that you have your EpiPen in your overnight bag, but also listing that and wearing a medical ID bracelet is, of course, very important.
What about moving family gatherings outdoors? Of course, earlier in COVID, that was certainly something people were trying to do. Now it seems gatherings are moving more and more indoors. Do you have any suggestions there?
Yeah, you know, just in terms of prevention and just thinking about even before people go, I mean, we're coming up kind of into the final stretch for Thanksgiving, but the first step is making sure you're vaccinated. People who are vaccinated, of course, can still, in particular with COVID or flu, you can still get viruses that you're vaccinated for, in particular with COVID, but we know the presentation is much less intense. And in most cases, we know that the mortality rate of people who have caught COVID who are vaccinated are much lower than people who are unvaccinated. So we want to make sure that, you know, we take that first step before we even step out the door to make sure that we have our vaccines all up to date. And you can talk to your local healthcare provider with regards to what vaccines are applicable to you in your age category. You know, certainly too, as you're going to other people's homes, you know, just thinking again about making that good decision, you know, should I go if I'm sick? Sometimes people will, I guess, decrease the idea like, oh, it's just allergies. Well, you might not know that before you actually, you know, step out that door into somebody else's home. And so moving those outdoor gatherings to like, or moving the gatherings to an outdoor setting, it can, if it's possible, you know, always a good idea just because the air is not recirculated. But of course, in the Midwest and when we've got freezing temps, you know, that's not always
not
feasible.
Very fun, right? Or feasible.
Yeah, or fun. And then oftentimes, too, it can trigger other illnesses
sure,
for people,
sure.
Particularly with asthma and allergies. So we have to be mindful of that. But certainly if you have the ability to get fresher, more circulated air, that always, I think, helps. But again, weather permitting with that.
Getting advice on safely traveling and gathering with loved ones ahead of Thanksgiving, Dr. Danielle Mitchell in primary care, our guide. You can join in with your questions for the doctor, 800-642-1234. You mentioned vaccines, and the state health department says 27% of Wisconsin residents have received at least one dose of flu vaccines. What questions are surfacing from patients about flu vaccines or COVID boosters? What do you hear?
I think the common one is the misconception that when people get their flu vaccine, that they get the flu from the vaccine. And that's absolutely a falsehood. It's a myth. There are flu vaccines that are intranasal that are live attenuated flu virus, and people can get flu from those. And it's usually typically a mild case because the virus that's contained within flu mist is one of the common intranasal vaccines that we use for flu. it is possible to get influenza from that type of a vaccine, but it's a mild attenuated virus that's in that. So typically symptoms are very mild in those cases. For the actual flu vaccines themselves, it's not even, they don't contain the whole virus. They just contain a very small piece of protein from a virus. That protein has no ability to suddenly replicate into a whole virus. People can have side effects with regards to, you know, headache, sore throat, fevers, sore muscles, but those are all signs that your immune system is working and recognizing that there's been a pathogen introduced, and that's how you form that antibody response to later on protect yourselves. The other instance, too, where people have received their vaccine and then ended up contracting and had a confirmed case of flu is either it's a variant that wasn't covered in the vaccine, or as bad luck would have it, they just got exposed to the flu virus within a period of time right around getting that vaccine. And unfortunately, they haven't formed an immune response to that strain yet.
We have less than a minute left, but what about COVID boosters? Because there's confusion about who gets them and that what they are able to do. The latest COVID booster, can you tell us a little bit about that? We only have about 30, 40 seconds.
Yeah, so the latest COVID booster does cover multiple strains of the COVID virus. We are recommending that if people have eligibility for it to go and get their booster done. We do know that people very quickly reinfect with COVID, so even if you've had COVID, you can still get COVID very soon after having had it. So if you have questions about your eligibility for the vaccine, we definitely recommend that you talk with your healthcare provider.
Dr. Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Dr. Danielle Mitchell is SSM Health's Regional Medical Director for Primary Care for Southern Wisconsin, talking with us about holiday travel and staying healthy. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.